Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and what a big news day continuing for stopping damage from the flu, the superstorm, and gunfire, but all controversial measures. We'll keep talking about them, plus tomorrow's likely school bus strike in the city, which we had Beth Fertig on a little earlier. On now to the House, where they are set to vote on legislation today that would amount to $50 billion in Sandy aid. It's been more than 2 months since the storm, and while many are saying this aid is long overdue, some are still trying to put on the brakes, claiming pork or irrelevance. Joining us to discuss what's in that aid package and the likelihood that it will pass, WNYC's contributing editor for politics and investigations, Bob Henley, and The Wall Street Journal's Andrew Grossman in Washington. Hi, Bob. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Hey, Brian.
So, Bob, the House is set to vote on legislation that it would amount to $50 billion in Sandy aid. I think many of our listeners know by now that one bill, $17 billion, targets immediate emergency aid. That's the less controversial one. The other one, sponsored by New Jersey Republican Rodney Frelinghuysen, is the $33 billion amendment dedicated to long-term mitigation and infrastructure repair. Is that where the controversies begin?
Well, and it's also, it looks like I've seen like $33.7 billion for Congressman Frelinghuysen's amendment. Really, this is just carrying over from the drama that happened. You may remember that this package was a casualty of the fiscal cliff debate. President Obama was successful in making his case about raising taxes on the wealthiest households. And then basically there had been guarantees given to Governor Christie and Republicans in the New York and New Jersey delegation that this would come to a vote. It didn't come to a vote in the last minutes of that Congress, and so they had to start all over again. But we are still seeing this debate over Sandy aid is very much influenced by the growing bitterness in the debate over the debt ceiling. And so we see that there will be several amendments brought up today, one right off the bat of the Rogers measure. That's the one that's being put forward by Appropriations Chairman Hal Rogers of Kentucky. That's the $17 billion in emergency funding. Right off the bat, there'll be an amendment from Congressman Mulvaney out of South Carolina that seeks to offset the $17 billion in emergency funds by making a 1.63 cut in discretionary appropriations for fiscal year 2013. Now, advocates for aid say this has never been done before, that we've taken time to be in count when we have an emergency. The Republicans say, listen, this country is in the middle of a fiscal emergency and has to do things differently.
So, Andrew Grossman in Washington, how much of a break from precedent would that be if they're going to cut other programs to pay for a disaster emergency? And do some of these dissenting Republicans have a point here? Is there some kind of entitlement to automatically go into more federal debt every time a big storm hits?
Well, they do point to some offsetting that was done with some Katrina aid, but they also, the advocates for this aid would also say that this has taken longer than that has, and that there is no precedent for waiting this long and for this amount of controversy over this sort of thing. But a lot of the people who are supporting this, supporting the offsets, who are skeptical of this, are members of that Tea Party class of 2010. Who came into Congress looking to cut spending and made that their main priority. And for them, they say a lot of business as usual, the way Washington has done things, the way Congress has done things, has led to this increase in the debt. And they don't really care that this is how things have always been done.
And Bob, how specific are the provisions in this legislation in terms of what the money can be used for?
Well, they are, to be fair, this, $50 billion, $51 billion is larger than some appropriations for agencies. And this would normally take months to deliberate over. What there is here is a concern about past documented instances going back in after Katrina and Rita. The GAO, nonpartisan fact finders, estimated that anywhere between $600 million and $1.4 billion was payments were made fraudulently. Similarly, the Community Block Development Grant, which is a big part of this legislation, offers tremendous flexibility to local governments because it can help you put money into a neighborhood, cover sewers, cover the firehouse, even a shopping center. But that same flexibility historically has been used, and it's been documented, for all kinds of corruption, where some of that money ends up being campaign contributions and payoffs. So it is something where, you know, we're trying to, I think the analogy would be, we're trying to change the fan belt on an engine while the car is running.
So, listeners, do you have any comments or questions about the Sandy relief bill coming up for a vote in the House shortly? It's supposed to be in about an hour and a quarter. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Actually, I guess the House is going to start debate in around an hour and a quarter, and the vote would come later. 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. For WNYC's Bob Henley and Andrew Grossman in Washington. Andrew, are they definitely going to get to a vote today? Are we going to see raucous House floor debate once this starts next hour? Is this going to be a spectacle on C-SPAN this afternoon?
As much of a spectacle as C-SPAN gets, this is likely to be a long, as Peter King said yesterday evening, it'll be a long, hard day of votes. They expect a lot of close votes. They'll take up the legislation starting early this afternoon, and then they have to deal with these dozen amendments. The supporters of the bill would like to keep most of them out because they could hurt the chances of passage in the Senate or reduce the amount of money in the bill. So, but final passage would likely happen tonight, and if it's going to happen this week, it has to happen tonight because the House is out of session the rest of the week because the Republicans have their retreat in Virginia.
How about some of these items that were in the original Senate bill that have been criticized for containing pork? For example, $150 million for fisheries as far away as Alaska, or $2 billion to federal highway improvements, $25 million for improving weather forecasting systems. Well, maybe that's related to hurricanes. $118 million for Amtrak upgrades. I don't know if that is. It could be. Or there was even something about a roof at the Smithsonian Institution.
Well, so the lawmakers who support this say that the Smithsonian Institution was the roofs of the Smithsonian were damaged by the storm. Right, the storm hit Washington too.
I thought I heard it was damaged before the storm, which is what makes it questionable.
Oh, okay. Well, then, I mean, in some of these cases,
made worse by the storm. I don't know.
Right. For example, with the fisheries in Alaska, they say, you know, there was a fisheries disaster declared, and the way that these bills have worked in the past is that other disasters that are smaller disasters that haven't gotten their own
funding
emergency
stream
package like this get included in these larger bills. And some Republicans have a problem with that. But, you know, then you also have, for example, yesterday at this Rules Committee hearing to figure out what amendments were going to be allowed to be offered, you had two members of Congress, one Republican, one Democrat from Colorado, really pushing to get a relatively small amount of money. I think it was $100 million or so to help deal with damaged soil erosion caused by wildfires in Colorado. So, you know, this sort of thing can be crucial to getting support of other members. You know, they need 60 votes in the Senate for passage. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska is a Republican whose vote could be crucial to getting those 60 votes.
Let's take a call from John in the eye of the storm, Point Pleasant Beach. Hi, John. You're on WNYC.
Yes, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. And as I mentioned to the screener, while I have no sympathy for the Tea Party argument generally, and perhaps they do have an overall general point about offsets for some of these large-scale disaster bills, now is not the time to make it. And in particular, I wanted to raise the argument and suggest that the delegation, the New York and New Jersey delegation, make the argument about generally red states subsidizing blue states with overall general federal expenditures.
Right. That's a perennial one, Brian. For years in the post-World War II environment, what's happened, and this is well documented, is that the Northeast, particularly New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, send down far more money than they ever get back from the federal government. There's been a transfer of wealth to the red states, as the caller properly points out. So you have some states that get more than a dollar, well over a dollar in what they get from the federal treasury, where we get, I don't know, like, you know, like 40% to 50%, 60 cents on the dollar, whatever it is. We are generally been the economic engine. And so the logic that has been actually made by both Republicans and Democrats from the region is that this is really about national recovery. And there is a concern that particularly when you deal with municipal finance, and that's what's at stake here, if someone says, well, why does this matter? We have dozens and dozens of communities, both in New York and New Jersey, that have a very small window to get back in the swing of things economically because they're dependent on seasonal tourist traffic that is really from Memorial Day to Labor Day. So if they don't get the beach repaired, mm-hmm. the parking lot and the amenities in place, then you're looking at a real shortfall both for state, county, and local revenue. And what they've done is gone to short-term credit markets, which is like Tony Soprano with a suit, to borrow. And on expectation, like a payday loan, that they will see federal money. So that's why delays do have an implication mm-hmm. at municipal and state finance.
And here is Ian in another eye of the storm, Massapequa. Ian, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Ian.
That's actually Danny from Massapequa.
I'm so sorry. Hi.
Your old friend Danny from Massapequa.
I don't know how you got on the board as Ian, Danny, but go.
I don't know, but listen, Newsday, I don't know if you mentioned it, had a wonderful article on Sunday. It was a very extensive article where they actually, if you read it, came down on the side of the Tea Party for holding this up, that if you read the bill, there's money going to 48 of the 50 states. And, of course, because any time politicians get their hands on anything, they ruin it. And none of the money is going to people. So when they interview people, like, sitting on their porch in Long Beach and they're looking, they're not getting any money from this bill. It's going to agencies. And when agencies get their hand on it, where does it go? It goes to their contributors. So, as usual, billions of dollars will be spent. They did mention the roof of NASA, the roof of the place, and it's all going to be wasted, just like the stimulus money. Where is it going to go? It's not going to go to the person sitting in Point Pleasant or Long Beach, Long Island, who needs money. It's going to go to politicians, and then it's going to go right to their contributors.
Ian, listen to me. Danny, thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there. But address it, Bob. This is just the kind of thing you were referring to before, I guess, with respect to corruption, or some of it is just bureaucracy.
It's a scale. It's a size. I mean, one of the things about the Community Block Development Grant that's been in business since the 60s is that there's a heavy, like 10-15% in terms of administrative costs that go to the agencies before it gets to Main Street, if you will. And also in the case of, I will say, though, there's at least been one example where we know it's going to have the direct impact. The decision earlier this month to raise the borrowing capacity of the National Flood Insurance Program, some $9.7 billion, Brian, that really will ensure that over 100,000 Sandy claims will be paid. The bottom line is it's mixed, and it's really about accountability here and about following up and making sure that these agencies are transparent. And I will say that I will commend the Rules Committee that's led by Texas Congressman Pete Sessions. All these amendments are up online. You can really follow along with this debate. Mm-hmm. And that's refreshing transparency.
Let's go to Wayne in Cranford. Wayne, you're on WNYC. Hang on, let me get your line up here. Could you help me with this? Having a little mouse problem here. No, there are not critters in the studio.
Hello.
I'm talking about my computer. Wayne, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there, Brian. Great guest. Awesome guest.
Thank you.
Your previous caller, also named Brian, preceded my question, so I'm going to turn it in, not from a question, but into a statement.
His name has gone from Ian to Brian to Danny. But anyway, Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, I see. Brian had called earlier to ask a question that I'm going to. So he kind of stole my thunder
here.
But I see a regional bias against the Northeast here. I looked over the list of I believe it was 67 representatives who voted against the $9.2 billion increase in FEMA borrowing, and I think 67 of them were Republican. Excuse me, of the 67, about 55 were from the South. And to me, this, and many of them were, of course, from the Gulf region, including the representative from Biloxi, Mississippi. So I see something that transcends Tea Party into a sectional bias here, and wondered if I can get some commentary by your
And that really furthers the question that the previous caller asked. So, Andrew Grossman, how much of this is Red America just, you know, getting a little glee and putting a lick on New York and New Jersey?
Well, obviously, none of the members will say that, and in fact, they'll go out of their way to say that that's not the case. They're just looking after their constituents' money. I think there is some of that. I mean, I think that there is often a view, especially from some conservative members from more rural districts, that when you send money to union-run big cities like New York or Northern New Jersey, that it's rife with corruption and the money is going to be wasted. But and you know, you saw a bit of that with the debate over funding for the Zadroga Act, which provided health care for the 9/11 first responders.
But beyond that, political payback. How about, to further Wayne's question, how about Republicans in Congress who are socking it to Chris Christie for embracing President Obama over Sandy just before the election?
Brian, just if I could jump in here, I think that it's important also to keep our eye on actually the flood insurance program and to keep a little bit of a focus on what exactly that is. It collects over $3 billion in premiums a year from some 6 million households that are in marginal places that perennially flood. And so on one given year, they can have to pay out, I think after Katrina, it was like $18 billion for 1 year. There is a serious academic question there about the sustainability of this whole approach to building in floodplains and then bailing the same people out over and over again. That said, I think also you have to look at the fact that this is something that Chris Christie, when I was covering him yesterday in Bradley Beach, raised. There's a certain concern here about the country breaking up along these regional divides. You could get to a place that this didn't pass, for instance, this was Christie's point of view, where maybe the Northeast sits out voting for disaster relief for the next mm-hmm. Gulf Coast disaster.
Well, let me ask you, Bob, about one particular piece of, I don't know if corruption is the right word here, if that's too strong, or just something that's expensive. You showed me the article in the Star Ledger the other day about this company that's very politically connected to both parties that Governor Christie gave a no-bid cleanup contract to. But the critics of this company say their real talent is in getting top dollar reimbursements from FEMA, so they're really sticking it to the taxpayers.
Well, this is Ashbritt that's out of Florida. I asked the governor about this directly yesterday and the Star Ledger reporting that was in Sunday's paper. He points out that this was a contract that they basically tacked onto the Connecticut had drafted, so he said technically it wasn't a no-bid contract. He said he was concerned about expediting debris removal because research has shown that in disasters, the thing you need to do is get the debris out of the way to begin the psychological and turnaround that has to happen in something as traumatic as Sandy. Now, critics point out that, first of all, this is optional. This wasn't mandatory. This company comes in and basically understands the paperwork of FEMA and has a track record for getting a high rate of reimbursal. But there was one community, Wall Township, where, according to the Star Ledger's reporting, Ashbritt came in and said it would take $2 million to clean up, and the town, using its own devices, its own resources, did it for a fraction of that, some $400,000. So that wasn't a great story to have break right as we're talking about this seminal debate on Sandy Aid.
Anybody waving that on the House floor this morning, Andrew?
They haven't started yet, but I mean that sort of prospect has been raised. Scott Garrett, who from Northern New Jersey, probably the most conservative member of the New Jersey delegation, last night was saying that, you know, he'd gone to meet with a woman in a very small house that had been completely destroyed. They helped tear down her drywall, and you know he said, you know, just as important for as getting aid to these people is making sure that we don't have to go say to that woman that this aid went to political contributors, that this aid went to people living in places that weren't affected by the storm. And that, you know, that was the take he was putting on his desire to put these sorts of accountability measures in this bill.
WNYC's Bob Henley, Andrew Grossman in Washington for The Wall Street Journal. And Andrew, before you go, let me just touch on a couple other things real quick. First, I don't even know if you've seen this yet. It just broke during the show today. Chuck Schumer has come out for Chuck Hagel for defense secretary, and Schumer was considered key here as a strongly pro-Israel Democrat to indicate whether the pro-Israel Democrats are going to find Hagel's views on the Middle East acceptable. So how big is that Schumer endorsement?
That's a really big deal, and I think the White House and Senator Hagel knew that. Former Senator Hagel knew that because Schumer was the first senator that Hagel sat down with face to face, and I think that will provide. And he's not even on the committee that oversees this nomination, the Armed Services Committee. So I think that will probably be a real boon to that nomination.
And of course, the president and vice president are set to present their comprehensive plan to reduce gun violence this week, which apparently will include legislation to expand background checks for gun purchases, as well as 19 actions the president can take on his own. And it's those executive actions that could include compelling federal agencies to improve sharing of mental health records, limiting guns imported from overseas, more aggressive enforcement of existing laws, and directing the Centers for Disease Control to research gun violence and the public health statistics that the NRA has successfully blocked from being connected. I wonder if you think there's any seriousness to Congressman Steve Stockman of Texas, Republican, who says that if the president regulates guns via executive order, bypasses Congress, that this congressman will file articles of impeachment.
No, I don't. I don't think there's that much serious to that. I think that the White House will likely be fairly certain that they're on firm legal ground when they make any of these executive orders, and I think, you know, the real fight will be in the place where most of the mainstream Republicans who want to, and some Democrats who want to weaken any gun control legislation will fight is on the legislative initiatives that President Biden or Vice President Biden will recommend to the president.
Do we know when those are coming into public view?
It could be as early as tomorrow, we're hearing.
So we will see. Andrew Grossman for The Wall Street Journal in D.C., WNYC's Bob Henley, thank you both.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a new study about lead levels and crime raises new questions. Stay with us.